Madam Clerk, thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the January 5th meeting, the January 5th, 2010 meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors. If you would all please rise and join me in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, I understand we have no changes to today's agenda. But before we get to work, I'd like to turn the floor over to Supervisor Patterson for a remembrance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. 2009 ended on a sad note with the death of Annie McMahon, who was a longtime, very true friend of San Luis Obispo County. Annie spent most of her professional life in public service. She was one of the first legislative assistants working for David Blakely. She went on to work a number of years for Congresswoman Lois Capps. And for a couple of years early in my tenure on the board, she served as my legislative assistant. Most recently, she worked as the federal program manager for the California Coastal Commission. And she also worked for a number of years in the local office of the Nature Conservancy, crafting conservation easements, working with local landowners to preserve the signature landscapes of San Luis Obispo County. While Annie worked in my office, she was instrumental in working with others to form the Central Coast Ag Network, which was a marketing strategy for helping local farmers and ranchers market their products locally to help keep them on the land and make their efforts profitable. Annie was a dedicated wife and mother, an energetic political activist, and a passionate environmental advocate. She'll be sorely missed by all of us here in San Luis Obispo County, but her legacy lives on in the very diverse and beautiful natural environment of San Luis Obispo County. We'd like to take a moment of silence in remembrance of Ann McMahon. Thank you. And an Irish wake has been planned to honor Annie. It will be Saturday, January 23rd on the Santa Margarita Ranch. We don't have all the details yet, but you can call my office at 781-4339 for details. Give us a few days to get those details, and then you can call again, 781-4339. January 23rd, a Saturday, at the Santa Margarita Ranch.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Patterson, and we will miss Ann very much. With that, our next order of business is to elect a new chairman and vice chairman, and I would entertain a motion on that matter.
Mr. Chair, I move that Mr. Mitchum become our next chairperson, and whoever is in line for the vice chair,
Mr. Hill, I think.
I'll also nominate Mr. Hill to be the vice chair.
I'll second.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor, aye.
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 And opposed, none. Gentlemen, congratulations.
Chair, hate to do this to you, but there's a Kodak moment we have to.
A Kodak moment? Your name signs.
Oh.
No, let's just leave him this way. All right.
There. All right. Should have taken them.
Okay. Do you want them closed one way or the other?
Well, this time I'm going to make a presentation to our past chairman. So, Mr. Gibson, in appreciation of your services as chairman, and I can tell you this last year has been a trying one. There's been a number of challenges this board has had to face, and with his leadership, I think we handled them quite well. So I want to thank you, and I hope to do anywhere close to as good a job as you did, sir.
If I could, Mr. Chair?
You could join in. I'd also like to thank my colleague, Supervisor Gibson. I thought he did a very good job handling things here in the chamber and helping myself as a new supervisor, and also did a terrific job, as you said, in a trying time, I think, handling things in closed session and other situations as well, and I salute him.
Well said. Thank you, Mr. Gibson, for a job well done.
Very good.
Well done. Thank you for your kind words, colleagues. It's an honor and pleasure to serve with you.
Okay, with that, we're going to be moving into the consent items. Type of motion, or do we have anybody that wants to pull
from my colleague? No, there's one.
No, except to speak. We're ready to go.
There is one.
From who?
There's a yellow slip.
Yes, I have one slip here, but before we go to that, yeah, colleagues.
Yes. I want to comment on A7, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Mr. Kasagian.
Not at this time, thank you.
Comment on A18?
Yes, and none, sir.
Okay, thank you. I have one request to speak on A24. Cindy Marie, have a seat, please.
Thank you. Good morning. Cindy Marie Abse, Victim Witness Director for the District Attorney's Office. I request a technical correction to item A24 of the staff report recommendation. The dates on the document are last year's dates, not this year's dates. Somehow I made it through all those reviews. So the dates of the grant agreement with the California Emergency Management Agency should read October 1, 2009 through September 30th, 2010.
Okay, thank you. Did you get those changes, Madam Clerk? Thank you very much.
I have copies if you need those of the corrections. And congratulations, Supervisor Meacham, and thank you, Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you very much. I have no other request to speak. Mr. Hill, A7.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to comment to Ms. Pello and Ms. Perez. This is an item that is asking to put on hold bids for construction of the rental car facilities at the airport until such time that the financial condition of the airport improves, and we're hopeful that there will be more commercial service hopefully this year. So I just wanted to say good call and thank you.
Mr. Patterson, A18?
Yes, sir. Thank you. Mr. Chair, A18 deals with the county treasury. There are a number of actions that we take as part of that agenda item. One is to appoint Dan Buckshy as the Board of Supervisors representative to the County Treasury Oversight Committee, and I think that's a good thing for us, and I'm happy that Mr. Buckshy is willing to take on that added responsibility. Frank Freitas, our county treasurer, is recommending that we amend the investment policy to allow more local banks to qualify through the county treasury's investment-bearing deposits, and I'm happy to see that we're doing that to keep as much of our investment money local as we can, and I appreciate, again, Mr. Freitas' recommendation that we amend the policy to again allow local banks to qualify to hold those investments. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Patterson. Seeing no other comments, I'll entertain a motion to approve the consent.
I'll roll off the consent agenda items.
Second. Moved by Mr. Asajian, seconded by Mr. Gibson to approve the consent. Roll call, please.
Mr. Asajian?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Meacham?
Aye. We have one presentation. I entertain a motion to
approve up the presentation item.
Second. The move by Mr. Sargent, seconded by Mr. Hill. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Let's move into the first one, which would be Mr. Alsop, please.
Good morning. It's my pleasure to bring to you to introduce Elizabeth Merson, who is is representing the San Luis Obispo County organizations, voluntary organizations active in disaster. It's one of the behind-the-scenes groups that we have working in the county. It's quite a large organization with many community-based organizations involved. They're a very integral part of our disaster preparedness organization countywide, participate in our emergency exercises. Last month in Maryland at the National Emergency Training Center, VOAD came up as a number of times as an integral part of disaster planning, and indeed Elizabeth was there being involved with our community. A quick side note, statewide, in Sacramento, there's a statewide voluntary organization that's putting together a meeting so that county emergency managers and others can become familiar with their VOAD counterparts in their particular counties. We don't have to do that here. We're fortunate to have a very good working relationship with our VOAD and the other organizations in the county. And with that, I'll turn it over to Elizabeth Merson to give you about a quick 10-minute or so presentation on what they do and what they're all about. But we certainly do appreciate them. They are a value to our county, and it's something that the county doesn't directly support. You know, they stand on their own financially. And with that, I'll turn it over to Elizabeth.
Thank you, Mr. Alsop. Morning, young lady.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. I just wanted to come here and make sure that everyone was aware of Voluntary Organizations Active in Disaster, better known as VOAD, and what we do in the county so that, A, you can rely on us as needed, and, B, spread the word and help us just further strengthen our ties in the community. To give you a little history, VOAD started actually in the 60s with a national disaster that happened, and there was all these nonprofits that realized that they were duplicating services in some parts of the town that had been destroyed, and other parts of the town were receiving no services at all. So they decided that they needed to get together and start coordinating their services. So as time went on, it went down to the state level and to the county level or regional level, and now it's down to the local level, that it's really up to the locals to coordinate. The purpose of VOAD is to organize all of the volunteer organizations to collaborate, communicate, and coordinate their services to avoid duplication. So an analogy that I try or that I like to use is just as the fire service has mutual aid, and all of the fire departments work together to fight a fire that's beyond the capabilities of one fire department, the same can be done with VOAD. VOAD agencies can come together and rely on each other to support and provide the most effective service possible for the community. So it's just bringing a lot of the systems that are already in place for government entities into the nonprofit realm and really making sure that everyone's communicating with each other and everyone in the nonprofit realm that's responding to disasters knows what's going on. We've been in the county since 2007, and since that time we've built up 40 members, 40 nonprofit members, as well as about 7 private partner agencies that have agreed to step in and help in the event of a disaster to provide their services. Each organization operates as itself and does its own mission. So you're not going to have the food bank helping with animals, per se. You're going to have the food bank specialize in what they do, which is food, and have Woods Humane Society specialize in animals. So everyone is still doing their own mission. They're just doing it in a coordinated fashion. It just makes for a much more effective response, as I'm sure you can imagine. We have been very grateful that PG&E has sponsored us for the past 3 years so that we can operate this program, and they've allowed us to have staff, myself, dedicated to keeping the program going. We've found that looking at other VOADs, without that staff dedication, it's hard to keep the VOAD organization successful, as it's just another thing added on to a nonprofit's plate, which is already full, just as government officials' plates are already full. We've been very successful and very proud of what we've accomplished. We've done drills with Ron at OES and to practice our emergency procedures. We've done tabletop drills And so we're really making strides in really building these bonds between and partnerships between all of the agencies that are involved. And we welcome more agencies to join. If any agency has an interest in being part of a coordinated disaster response, it's a great way to get on the ground ahead of time. A lot of agencies are apt to say, okay, we'll get involved as soon as they're in disaster, you can call us. But it's so important to build those relationships prior to a disaster so that you already know the players, you know what each other's capabilities are, and you're already worked into the network ahead of time. Any questions or anything that I can answer?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Merzon, if you will, you might let people listening and watching know how they can contact you if they do want to participate.
Certainly.
That would be helpful. And I also want to mention, too, that Ms. Merzon is, as part of her many duties, is a representative on the Fire Safe Council and has worked on the Fire Safe Council for years. And it's one more activity that helps benefit the county at large. And thank you for that.
Another collaborative effort. And
yes,
we've seen
very
the success
so.
Of that.
So for if sure. you do have contact information,
yes.
that would be helpful.
Yes, my contact information is 805-543-06. 96 extension 16, and I'd be happy to come make a presentation. I'm going to make a presentation this afternoon, so I can go out in the county and work with board of directors or whoever is the decision makers in an organization to explain how their agency would fit specifically into VOAD.
Well, thank you very much, and it's still fresh in my mind working with the EOC on a number of occasions during the 2003 earthquake. I mean, the necessity to be prepared is absolutely imperative, and I think that we need to constantly reaffirm that because it's not a question of if, it's a question of when we're going to be experiencing something again. So I do appreciate your efforts. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, I would only also observe in the brochure here, it's an impressive list of nonprofit organizations, but there are also associate members and from the private sector here. And their participation, you know, Meathead Movers, Mission Community Services, Pacific Gas and Electric, the Our Animal Services and OES, but also Service Master and State Farm Insurance, all helping support the work of these fine nonprofits, and we thank them as well for their participation.
And it is amazing how communities do come together in time of a disaster, but the preparation prior to that is absolutely essential. Thank you very much. Assist or receive and file. So, Madam Clerk, the next item, please. I'm sorry. It is public comment. You have to bear with me. I ran meetings for almost 10 years as a mayor. This is a little bit more intimidating, it seems, though.
We're an intimidating bunch.
So I have Dr. Bornstein, public comment, followed by Terry Burton.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
I come to talk to you about the issue of my year, 2009, pandemic influenza H1N1. I wanted to give you a brief update and also a bit of congratulations to our fine staff. The virus is somewhat retreating, but it's still present, and we do not know if it will return with a vengeance, as is true for some pandemics, so we continue our state of alertness and preparedness. We continue to test for the virus in selected populations, and we're continuing to this day to find new cases each week. Virtually all of the influenza viruses that have been seen since the start of this pandemic in April of 2009 have been this strain, the H1N1, formerly known as swine flu, to the exclusion, even through December, of any of the normally expected seasonal flu viruses. Similarly, we continue to see people hospitalized with this virus, and we have had 39 such hospitalizations in our county and 2 deaths with this infection since September of last year. Thus, I come to tell you that vaccination is still the best way to protect yourselves. Now is a good opportunity for those who have not yet received such a vaccination, and supply is ample and open to anyone who wants a dose. And to emblem to give that impression we have brought with us today. I have brought one of our public health nurse supervisors at the pleasure of the chair. If you want to make any of yourselves available to stick out a limb, preferably an upper one, we will make vaccine available to those of you who haven't had an opportunity. I also want to tell everyone that there are public clinics coming available next week, Tuesday and Wednesday, January 12th and 13th, from 2 to 7 p.m. at any of our three health centers, one in Paso, SLO, and Grover, and no appointments are necessary. We're especially encouraging the under 10-year-olds to come and get their second dose. Alternatively, they can go to their private health care provider and get that second dose. And also I want to mention that French Hospital will be vaccinating at their health fair at the Mondano Expo Center on January 16th and 17th from 12 to 2 p.m., for the general public on those days. Other hospitals have also stepped forward and had public clinics, and we are working with them to provide other opportunities. In the way of self-congratulation, I do want to tell you that to date we have had impressive numbers of people vaccinated in our county, greater than 25,000 by the public health department alone, with perhaps 30 to 50,000 more from our partners, hospitals, colleges, private providers, community health centers. In a six-week period alone, November 9th through the 18th, close to 15,000 children received vaccination at our school-located clinics, including private schools and state preschools. And we're very grateful for the support we got from school administrators and nurses. In our targeted clinics, we've had 5,000 in the early days, and now we've opened up to the general public and had more than 6,000. With the help of paramedics and a new expanded scope of practice, we've been able to do quite a bit with this. And behind the scenes, our stalwart administrative assistants and temporary help have handled more than 8,000 calls since November 2nd. Not that I want to be competitive, and I thank you, Mr. Chair, for giving me this extra 30 seconds, but as a point of comparison, I just got a press release from Santa Barbara County stating that they had vaccinated 20,000 individuals in their county and handled 2,300 calls with half of our staff size. So just wanted to note that. Managing this outbreak has been a very humbling experience, and I'm very proud of the men and women who have been part of this amazing team that just keeps ticking. The calls of vaccine seekers keep on coming as we want them to do. And our staff, especially our public health nurses, this one alone has probably vaccinated 5,000, and our administrative assistants, epidemiologists, lab personnel, and others have just done an amazing job. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Bornstein. You guys have done an amazing job with this this outbreak. My congratulations to you from my colleagues as well.
Thank you for your work. It's impressive.
Ms. Burton.
Good morning. My name is Carrie Burton from Morro Bay, California. I've been in contact with you in the past year in regards to the problems we have in the Chorro Valley. I've expressed my frustration over the coddling of the non-final permitted 8,000 square foot rental building, Roanoke of God. Cleese and Associates was hired by the city of Morro Bay to do a study. In their report, they clearly say that the septics of Roanoke are contaminating our well field. This well field has and again will supply the entire city of Morro Bay with supplemental water during this water crisis. The well field is contaminated with coliforms, nitrates, and ammonia from those septics. My well is within 50 feet of the many illegal leach fields and septics that has contaminated City Well 10A as proven in the Cleese report. Because of the negligence on the enforcement of that facility, our water is not clean or reliable. Is the county going to supply us with clean water? This is a health and safety issue for all of us. For you not to acknowledge or enforce the cleanup, permitting, or legality of Roanoke sewage facilities is completely wrong. I have 30-plus articles from 1972 predicting if it's allowed to continue, this would happen, and it now has. There are no final septics on that property, none. The Roanoke manager has recently offered to sell the Roanoke property to Dan Berman of the Morro Bay National Estuary, admitting the septics were a huge problem. In a letter from your chief building official, you are now claiming those septics are considered existing. Existing, then if that's the case, the Los Osos problem is solved, and I just saved everybody a lot of money because everything there is existing and their wells are testing just like mine. You all say that you're here to protect our properties, the environment, and the water supply. You've seen the test results, the CLEATH report, the city and the Regional Water Quality Control Board letters, and you continue to look the other way on the illegal septics and asbestos-covered building that's contaminating our properties. The county coastal permit you accepted from an old expired permit on that project is completely inaccurate and against Title 19. If you filled it out accurately, the Coastal Commission would be involved, not the county alone. We are in the coastal zone, in a critical coastal area, above the aquifer and on a tributary to the ocean. I again ask you to do what's right, to turn over a new leaf, and to protect the people of Chorro Valley and Kanay Valley and our water supply. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Millie Benson, followed by Gwen Taylor.
My name is Millie Benson. I live at 2544 Kanay Road. I am one of the 11 families told by the Water Department of Morro Bay several months ago that they no longer could afford or were obligated to supply water to us. This was done at a city council meeting where they were asking the council to vote that very night to stop supplying us with water with very little information to the council to stop supplying us with water within a few days. The city of Morro Bay's water department claimed that it would cost them $1 million to $1.5 million to build a water purification plant to clean the water for these 11 families. And indeed, that wouldn't be cost effective if it were indeed just 11 families that needed this clean water. Well, if you look at it, it wouldn't be cost effective if it was just for 11 families. It wouldn't be just for 11 families. It would be for most of Chorro Valley, because we know that water is one of our most precious resources. And it isn't just 11 families involved in this. It impacts in Chorro Valley, Morro Bay, and all of this area needs clean water, not just Chorro Valley, not just the 11 families in Chorro Valley. I purchased my property from my family on Kanay Road. The piece of property was an old Mexican land grant that my grandmother got, 6 acres, had 12 children, and so my mom got just a half acre. So when we built there, my grandmother had a contract with San Luis County, and a well was put on her property, so she got free water. We had a contract with San Luis County, we got free water, and then we had a contract with the city of Morro Bay to continue to get free water. The contract continued with the city of Morro Bay, and then when the city of Morro Bay decided in the last few months that they no longer could supply us with water, it seemed a little ludicrous that they would stop giving us water, yet the well 11, that is just next door to us, still on a piece of property that was in the original land grant, would be pumping water, and yet to service Morro Bay, yet it's going to pump water right underneath us and service Morro Bay, yet we couldn't get the water, we wouldn't be supplied with water that is coming out of the ground underneath our property. That seems so ludicrous that we could be sitting on the land and the water's coming out from underneath our property.
Thank you, Ms. Benson.
Oh, sorry.
I appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
You.
Gwen Taylor, followed by Eric Greening.
Good morning. I hope everyone has a very good New Year. Not necessarily happy, because we are in a very dire situation financially, not only in this country, but this county. That having been said, I would like to say this. For over 35 years, I have stood here at this podium, whether it be a board of supervisors or a planning commission, supporting those who we felt had integrity and were someone who was willing to listen to the public and take into consideration what the public wanted without anything to gain from their recommendations. Having said that, I would like to let you know that some of us received a desk letter from Supervisor Patterson, and it says, "With your support, I was the only incumbent who won re-election in 08. Victories by challenger Adam Hill and Frank Mitchum affirm that voters want our county to move in a new direction. I concur. The days of maintaining the status quo, business as usual, and good old boy politics are over in San Luis Obispo County, and none too soon. That may be true, but the fact is that we have a supervisor, Jim Patterson, who went out to the public, not just in his district, but into other districts, and asked for help. Many of us gave help, not only physically, but financially. And unfortunately, the first 4 years were those that were, shall we call it, supporting those who work so hard. His next term in office has declined to support the communities throughout the county that felt that his appointments were substantial. Unfortunately, Ms. Christie was one who has more knowledge than perhaps many of you sitting there on that board. She is very knowledgeable of the Brown Act. She is very knowledgeable of the Postal Commission Act. She is very knowledgeable about the whole county process. And she also is very knowledgeable about law. I have sat in this chamber and listened to her for many years, and I do not believe, as an individual who she has no responsibility to, she is not appointed by my supervisor. She has always been courteous, very willing to listen, and very informative when asked questions. I am sorry to see Mr. Patterson succumb to the politics.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Mr. Greening, please, followed by Mr. Margetson.
Thank you. Good morning. I am Eric Greening, and Happy New Year. I was actually planning to start with a moment of silence for Ann McMahon, but I see that that has already occurred, so I will just add that those of us who want to carry on her legacy can look for the Central Coast grown label in our food, or eat from local CSAs, or patronize the local vendors at our farmers market. Not all of our farmers market vendors are local, but they're generally more local than you find in the supermarkets, and some of them are, many of them are from our own county, and basically keep our eating local. We even now have local grain farmers again, just as we did 100 years ago, growing. If you read your Edible Slow magazine, you can learn a lot about heritage grains as well as some of the other foods produced in this county. Anyway, I just wanted to ask on the record, for the benefit of people in the listening and watching audience, I know that early in this year, your board is going to get two very important documents on which the Planning Commission has concluded their work. And if there could simply be a brief response giving the expected date you will hear these two items, I think it would be very useful for those of us who have new calendars to put things in. And if we're north of the grade, we probably have those beautiful Woodlands and Watersheds calendars. In any event, wherever you get your calendars, the two items I'm asking about are the conservation and open space element update, the first in 30-some years, and the grading ordinance revisions. Both of those will be very important items coming before your board, and if we can start writing down dates right now, it would come in very handy. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Green, and at the close, we'll get that information out. Thank you very much. Mr. Margetson, followed by Mr. Sadowski, please. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Richard Margetson, first question for the chair is, I'm curious when in the near future we're going to hear how you're going to handle public comment with respect to Los Osos in the future. I was going to come and give the final results on needs and wishes, but I'm going to leave that till next week when Jerry Walsh can be here. But what I really came today to talk about and follow up on is what Gwen Taylor started with. I understand Mr. Patterson has the right to remove a planning commissioner if he chooses. My problem is I don't understand why. And reading the recent editorial or brickbat, or actually it was a bouquet, in the Tribune, there's a quote in here that I want to read. This is referring to Mr. Patterson. He told Tribune reporter Bob Cuddy that he had been thinking about this for a long time and had been hearing complaints about Christie's confrontational style. The confrontational style was in quotations. He also said he observed her as at commission meetings and found she was, in quotes, not handling herself well. I'm in complete disagreement with that. I probably have attended or watched every planning commission meeting the last 5 years she's been on the commission, and I think she's been nothing but professional, respectful, and yes, she did get involved in some of the great debates. But as another commissioner said when she resigned, differences of opinion lead to better decisions. You've lost a valuable resource on that commission. Her amount of knowledge, her respect for the public, her handling of public comment, maybe that was the problem. Maybe she gave too much opportunity for the public to have input. I know on the Los Osos issue, she was very accommodating. Every meeting, she allowed more input, led to better decisions, led to changes that the staff had come forward with that needed to be changed because of public comment. When we lose that, what we become is protectors of staff. Protectors of staff that staff can do no wrong. Then government fails. Absolutely fails. Now, you know how many times I've been up here pointing out mistakes, and maybe it's time to bring out the greatest hits again. Maybe we start next week or the week after bringing out the greatest hits and showing the public the problems in the past and where they came from.
Thank you, Mr. Margeson. Mr. Sadowski, please, followed by Lindy Owen. Welcome, sir.
Good morning. Back in 2006, I was invited to the American Society of Mechanical Engineers' first conference on water drought. It was hosted by Dianne Feinstein's chief technical advisor in the University of Las Vegas. And there was several academia there, and basically the gist of it was the severe drought that the West Coast states are going to be experiencing or are experiencing. And what I got out of that conference and what I mentioned there was that, you know, I was from Morro Bay, and so we all live kind of downstream, and so here we are on the coastline and we're downstream. The people in Chola Valley have been basically, it's a form of abuse, is what it is, by the complicit allowing of illegal sewage systems that are right over, not only next to the people's private wells, but are one sustainable aquifer for Morro Bay. Now, Morro Bay has two aquifers, the Morro Basin and the Chora Basin, that they used to be able to get all their water from. I co-wrote a report regarding the Morro Basin aquifer and showing that there is severe sewage pollution from Morro Bay and Cayucas entering that aquifer, and there was even E. coli found in some of the well testing there. The people in Chola Valley were getting pumped unfiltered sewage to their house, unfiltered water to their houses. This is a serious problem, and the county needs to start addressing this issue. There's people that have gotten sick there already. I have a video that shows some of the areas that there's a septic system 20, 30 feet away from a private well, and the county had allowed it. And it's being complicit by us continuing to allow it. This is a serious problem. And the water situation that we have in California, it's no secret. I mean, that's the new oil, the new gold. And we need to start taking care of our precious resources. And I would really appreciate if this board would really look into this matter, and especially in Chorro Valley right now. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Lindy Owen, please, followed by Mr. Ben DeFada.
Good morning, Lindy Owen from Los Osos. I'd like to concur with Richard and Gwen Taylor about Sarah Christie's removal, or basic pressure to have her step down, and I'll just leave it. I think Jim Patterson, Bruce Gibson, and Adam Hill all get a sold-out sign next to your name on your website, please, because you have sold out, and I watched it happen with Los Osos. I know where the other two are coming from, and I understand that, but I didn't expect you to go to the corporate side and choose to make what I consider horrific decisions for my community. Another little interesting, I think it's an amazing story to look in the closets of Los Osos and our county and Pablo Ogren's activities. I might just break my thought and say Nacimiento water is not sold. Nacimiento is empty, and you still have 30% to sell, and the taxpayers of our county are going to eat the costs of that, not selling that water that doesn't exist. Anyway, but a little interesting example of what happened in Los Osos. After the CSD changed some of the members, we got Maria Kelly, Marshall Ohilski on there, and they're totally pro mega sewer. They like the big, expensive sewer, and they've supported it all along through backdoor endeavors, etc. Well, Dan Gilmore is our new general manager, and he took me aside when he was first applying for the job in private and told me that he and Pablo Ogren are best friends. They've been tight for years. They've worked on many projects before. Well, now he is the general manager of the CSD, and this new letter that came out from the CSD supporting that all appeals be rejected is totally non-typical of our CSD. It's just how it's now transferring into a Pablo-run CSD in Los Osos. So what you're seeing is projects that didn't work out very well in the past, we're going to get stuck with it. I have one other thing I'd like to request. The Coastal Commission was originally going to be here in, I think, February or March. And someplace around October, they switched. And instead of being able to be here our 27 appeals, we are now being asked to go to Huntington Beach, which is 5 hours away. And we're being told that we might get 5 minutes, if we're lucky, per appellant. Now, the carbon footprint is absurd for that many people to have to go down there to have their participation in a government process that is supposed to be part allowing people to participate. So, Cacho, I would ask you if we could not arrange for a teleconferencing perhaps on Friday here to avoid that many people having to waste 2 days possibly down in Huntington Beach just for their maybe 5 minutes. Thank you,
Ms. Owen. Mr. Sajjan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That request, Owen, Linda, that request can be put forward in writing to the executive director. It's not just my own decision. Obviously, that has to come to the commission for in public to have that decision made at what cost. And since I've been on the commission, we have had an opportunity to bring the commissioners here in town. That always happened in the month of July. The only change you're seeing for 2010, that from July it has moved to August. It was never here in the month of January or February. I don't know where you get that information, but since I've been on the commission, I have asked that we have at least
once a year, a meeting here in town.
Right.
And that's always been in the month of July. And the only changes you're going to see this year is going to be in August rather than July. It has nothing to do with the project. But I think it's a great idea if we can set up that system. I'll be happy to call Mr. Douglas myself, see if that can be arranged. But I won't hold my
Would be with agreement from the Board of Supervisors to allow these chambers to be used and to help set up that teleconference on, I understand, Thursday's Planning Commission, but possibly Friday, since the Coastal Commission is going to put our appeal at the end of the day on Thursday, it looks like, might as well consider. So
I would suggest if you would work with Mr. Sajjan, please, and I'm sure that he can try to.
Mr. Chair,
okay, I appreciate it.
If board ends has to work to make that communications happen, it depends which direction the board wanted to go. It's not even if the commission says yes, but the setup has to be set up here
right.
to allow this two-way communications. I don't mind asking the question, and let it be.
Okay.
I was mostly asking for your support. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. DeFada, followed by Rachel Totti.
Good morning, Supervisors. Happy New Year. I concur with the last five speakers. I am Ben, criticize your politicians, DeFada. Working half a year to pay your taxes to the government, state, county, or city is just plain slavery. Abusive and dictatorial powers. Hence the removal of Sarah Christie. What's worse is when property owners in the prohibition zone of Los Osos have to pay outrageous taxes for unaffordable gravity collection sewer that Pablo Ogren and Mr. Gibson, Supervisor Gibson, keep pushing and pushing and pushing when there are proven affordable alternatives available. In the Tribune last week, State Employees Union won another court decision that gives giving furloughs 2 days a month, soon to be 3 days a month, is illegal. Now the government will have to lay off several thousand state employees. That doesn't make a lot of sense, does it? This state is already at 16% unemployment. It is further reported last week to the Tribune that California will have a financial shortfall of over $60 billion this year. Gentlemen, you know who ends up paying for all these shortages. How much more can the people of Los Osos endure with this never-ending spending by the federal government, state, and this county, pushed by several people for this lousy gravity system? This is just another example of politicians behaving unprofessional to the detriment of their constituents, in this case, without looking at affordable alternatives. In this case, our local government could care less about how much they pay for products. And in my days, I remember the $600 toilet seat. The more government tries to fix things, the more government screws it up. I cite when they imposed the alcohol prohibition in 1929, it cost the taxpayers $300 million, done in the middle of the Depression. That was a lot of money in those days, not to mention it took place when many people were hungry, homeless, and cold. Politicians should be sued for bad decisions that cost citizens money, especially in bad times, like nowadays. Last year, the decision was made not to give seniors any more cost of living increases for a couple of years. This year, Social Security recipients, while giving themselves almost a 3% increase raise, they said there was no inflation. What planet do they live on? Like I said several weeks ago, liars can figure and figures can lie. Last year's auto repairs at the dealer were $70 to $80 an hour. Now they're over $100 an hour. Call a plumber or an electrician lately? You'll be surprised. Because of government, state, and local lawmakers, laws are made, enforced, taxed, and fined against people, businesses, products, and so forth. Likely, that's all they have been doing. That's why we are in this massive debt situation.
Thank you, Mr. DeFada, and Happy New Year to you, sir.
Thank you, sir. You just don't get it, do you? Not you. All of you.
Ms. Totti, please. That's my last request to speak. I hope I pronounced it correctly. If not, please correct me.
Hi, my name is Rochelle Toady, and excuse me, I'm...
Thank you very much.
...recovering from a cold. I'm a resident of the Napomo Mesa, and I've come here today because of the air quality issue that's been in the newspaper recently. In my neighborhood, the people are pretty evenly divided between retired people like myself and families with young children. And in the newspaper, naturally, it said that those groups are most affected by the air pollution that is floating over the Napomo Mesa. I came today because I noticed on the agenda that there was an item concerning the Friends of Oceano Dunes and San Luis Obispo, and I'm hoping this is a legal update for you and not a decision to sell that property at this time. I'm thinking that, you know, since we're in the midst of trying to determine how to handle that air pollution situation, that property might be part of that solution. I have brought a letter with some suggestions for all of you to consider to help with the air quality issue. And one of them was, again, that the land situation, which you're already dealing with. And the other one is to request begin replanting of the dunes as soon as possible. Now is the best time. I am a new resident. I forgot to mention that. I've been here less than a year. But I can tell you that there are weeds all over my yard, and it's mostly sand. So it's been wet lately. Things grow quickly. There's low activity in the off-road park at this time. We have the expertise at Cal Poly for people to tell us what to plant and where, what the native plants are, and so on. I'm sure many people would volunteer to come out and plant seeds or seedlings. I would myself. I came from Southern California area, the beach cities, and they frequently had planting parties where people came to either plant the sand dune areas or weed the sand dune areas. So I've seen this happen and work. We need to start soon to head off the problem before the windy months come and the summertime comes. I also would like to mention that I'm not a member of any particular group that may, you know, be contacting you or petitioning you or suing you. I'm just a part of that group that lives on the Napomo Mesa that enjoys living and breathing. So I appreciate the board's determination to address the air quality problem and uphold its vision for the county as a place that is safe, healthy, livable, prosperous, and well-managed. Thank you,
ma'am. Mr. Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If we are, in fact, at the end of public comment, I would respond briefly to those who are commenting about water and other situations in the Chorro Valley. There are two different things going on there. One of them is an issue of water service supplied currently by the city of Morro Bay. That's an issue that is really purely a city issue. There are also issues with a particular structure there. It's referenced as Roanoke of God. I wanted to emphasize for my colleagues' benefit and that of the public that the commenters today have drawn conclusions based on information that are not shared, in fact, by our staff nor by other agencies that are investigating this problem. That said, the regional board is actively involved in further investigations of the water quality issues there, and our county code enforcement officers are involved with an enforcement case against or involving that particular structure. I wanted you to know that there are timelines, permits, deadlines that will be coming up in May, and we're looking to have the various code violations that have been identified resolved by that time. So it is a matter of active investigation at this point.
Thank you, Supervisor Gibson. Just a couple of responses. Mr. Green asked to announce the two items that will be discussed by the board. The grading ordinance will be discussed on January 26th, and the conservation open space element of the general plan will be on February the 9th. In response to Mr. Margetson's question about how the chair will handle public comment, I'm not going to restrict public comment to less than 3 minutes unless it's a packed house to where we're going to try to get through more items. I'll try to allow for those of you that wish to speak for 3 minutes to do so. However, if we have a very heavy calendar that day, then I'm going to ask for your cooperation as well to try to minimize those comments, so if you would. So everyone will have their opportunity to speak and will be able to have their 3 minutes. Okay, with that, we're going to move into the public hearings. The first item, Madam Clerk.
First item is C1, a hearing to consider a request by Steve Denham for a variance granting modification of special construction standards in a flood hazard zone, Choro Creek Road near Morro Bay, 2nd District. It's recommended item be withdrawn.
Thank you. And this, there has been a recommendation to not act on this item as the requester has asked that this waiver request be withdrawn. Is there any other correction to that?
No, I believe the applicant is withdrawn. Tim Tomlinson is in the audience from the Public Works Department. Good comment.
Okay.
Honorable Chair Machen, Glenn Marshall, County Public Works. Yes, last week the appellant, Mr. Denham, had sent an email to the county requesting this item be pulled, and so Public Works is supporting that and recommending you thought you were nervous. first one of the year. Happy year, New Year, by the way. Well, basically, we're supporting the applicant's request for the waiver and recommending that to your board.
Okay, thank you. So there's no action to take on this other than it's just been pulled. Is that
correct? That's correct.
Okay, thank you very much.
Great, thanks.
Next item, please.
Next item is C2, a hearing to consider an appeal by the Deputy Sheriff's Association regarding the labor management representatives, currently the Human Resources Director, decision to accept a petition for recognition from the Association of the San Luis Obispo County Deputy Sheriffs to determine which organization will be the exclusive bargaining unit for sworn sheriff employees and to set an election for recognition. It's recommended denial of the appeal.
Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Sajjan. I just to remind folks, there won't be any afternoon public comment. It appears this is the last item on our agenda other than our closed session, so there won't be public comment this afternoon. And just one other point of order, if I could, in terms of the way we're going to be doing presentations in the future, for recognitions of different organizations or employees, those will be done in the afternoon after closed session at 1:30. We can come back on a happy note and deal with those that rather than deal with it first thing in the morning. What I'd like to do is get as much business as we possibly can done in the morning so we can move on. So with that, we'll go from there. At this point, this is a hearing in which we'll have the our management representative. She will make her presentation of the facts of the case, and then we will have the appellants, which is the DSA, and the real party's interest, the Association of the San Francisco County folks. And what I'm going to ask at when you come up, and we're going to need to swear everybody in after we get through with the staff report, is to present all of your documentation early on. If you have documentation for us, please present it to the clerk. She'll get it to us, and then we'll move from there. So with that, Ms. Schatz.
Sorry about that. Do you need to repeat anything? Okay, by way of context, the county employee relations policy and some law background, the labor relations in the county is guided by the county's employee relations policy, or the ERP, and it's pursuant to the Myers-Milius-Brown Act, or the MMBA. The employee relations policy gives employees the right to join and participate in an organization of their own choosing to negotiate wages, hours, and working conditions with their employer. The ERP allows employees to petition the county to recognize a new union once a year in January. And the ERP states that the county's management representative must determine the validity of the petition. If it's determined to be valid, then an election needs to occur so employees can vote for their representation. As some further background, in January of 2009, a group of sworn deputy sheriffs and sergeants under the name of Association of San Luis Obispo County Deputy Sheriffs, or the ASLOs, petitioned for an election to be represented by their new union. All deputy sheriffs and sergeants are currently represented by the Deputy Sheriffs Association. The DSA also represents corrections, dispatch, and other non-sworn sheriff employees. The ASLO's petition stated that they wish to be recognized as a bargaining unit comprised solely of employees who have the status of peace officers and to represent its members in employee relations with the county. The ASLO's petitioned for a single bargaining unit containing supervisors and non-supervisors. And the ASLO's petition contains signatures evidencing support by at least 40% of peace officer employees, which is required by the employee relations policy. Their actual support was 70% of all deputies and sergeants. The ASLO's provided names of officers, bylaws, and bank records pursuant to the employee relations policy. The management representative reviewed in February of 2009. At that time, that was completed by the assistant CAO, who was the management representative. The ASLO's petition substantially complied with the employee relations policy. The proposed single unit consisting of supervisors and non-supervisors was considered legally appropriate. The ASLO's petition was accepted and therefore an election was required. The Deputy Sheriff's Association appealed. They contended that the ASLOs were required to submit two petitions, one to decertify the DSA and one for recognition. They contended that the single bargaining unit of supervisors and non-supervisors was improper per the employee relations policy. They contended that the ASLOs petition was deficient because there was no constitution or no certified financial statement. The employee relations policy allows for advisory mediation prior to an appeal to the Board of Supervisors. So that's how we proceeded at that point. The State Mediation and Conciliation Service provided the mediator. There were two separate sessions held. The first session did not include the ASLOs group. It just included the Sheriff's Association and the county. And the second session included both parties, the ASLOs, the DSA, with the county. The goal of the mediation was to resolve the DSA's appeal and to schedule an election. The mediator made a recommendation. The mediator stated that we should maintain the acceptance of the ASLOs recognition petition, that there, we should require separate units for sworn or peace officers, supervisory and sworn non-supervisory employees without requiring a new ASLOs petition. The mediator recommended that we also allow the DSA to be on the ballot without requiring a separate petition from them. Technically, per the employee relations policy, the DSA should have filed their own petition. The mediator recommended that we allow them to be on the ballot without modifying that their petition or submitting their petition, excuse me. The mediator recommended we proceed with the election. At that point, neither the DSA nor the ASLOs agreed with the mediator's recommendation. The mediator also recommended a ballot for the election, and that's in front of you. The ballot would give the non-supervisory unit a choice for to choose between or among the ASLOs, the DSA, or no representation. And then the supervisory unit would also choose among ASLOs, DSA, or no representation. At the conclusion of this hearing, the board will decide, did the ASLOs file an acceptable petition and decertification, recognition petition and decertification petition pursuant to the ERP? If you decide no, the appeal is upheld and no election will occur. If you decide yes on number one, should two separate bargaining units be created for supervisory and non-supervisory sworn or peace officer employees? And if you decide yes on number one, what should the ballot look like? My recommendation as the management rep is as follows. To deny the DSA's appeal. To find that the ASLOs filed an acceptable recognition and decertification petition. To state that there will be separate units for supervisory and non-supervisory sworn peace officer employees. To allow an election to proceed and allow sworn employees to determine their representation. And to utilize the ballot that I presented on the prior slide. Do you have any questions for me?
Questions from the board? Mr. Sajjan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My communications with the folks involved, the question of the legality, as I shared with staff, I'd like to hear from our council publicly as where, if any liabilities upon us to move forward with any of those recommendations and have your council look into it and advise us.
Mr. Sajjan and board members, it's our opinion that if we proceed with the management representative's recommendation, that would be a solid, there would be a solid legal basis for that.
Thank you. Mr. Hill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Schatz, you said, and just so I could clarify, in the mediation, neither of the groups agreed with the mediator's recommendation. Could you share with us the objections, I guess, from the ASLOs group in terms of their concerns?
Council, is that okay?
Supervisor Hill, Rita Neal from County Council. There were a number of different objections on different bases, and I think probably the easiest way to answer that question would be perhaps to have the parties, when they give their presentations, speak to that, because I don't want to miss speak what their objections were. They were certainly varied.
Okay. That's good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question really relates to the relationship between our employees' relation policy and the Myers-Milius-Brown Act, and in terms of informing this board as to what body of law or policy we should be applying in our standard of review. And in particular, whether there's any issue with the management's representative's recommendation, which seems to go a little, any issue of the management's representation, management representative's recommendation that requires an analysis of Myers-Milius-Brown as opposed to simply working within our employee relations policy.
Supervisor Gibson, Rita Neal again from County Council. Myers-Milius-Brown Act is within the government code. It's not a very long set of statutes, and it basically sets out ground rules for which a county would apply their labor relations. And it also requires within the statutes that a county may, and in fact we do have a policy to carry out the purposes of the statute. The Myers-Milius-Brown Act allows for peace officers to be within their own unit, absent any other types of employees, such as dispatchers or corrections. The Myers-Milius-Brown Act also indicates that one of its purposes is to allow, as our policy does, the employees the choice of representation. So the policy should be written in the course of trying to carry out that purpose. So Myers-Milius-Brown Act gives us an outline, and the policy gives us more specifics of how we're supposed to follow. The board, and I can't remember what year passed the employee relations policy. So the analysis that was done by the management representative was done with that overlay of the Myers-Mills-Brown Act and along with the policy. So it was kind of an analysis with both the statute and the policy in place.
Okay, so we're allowed to operate to decide what we want to do here based on our policy, so long as it does not conflict with the Myers-Mills-Brown, would be
exactly
the way that I would think about it. The other question that I had is, and just so we're clear on the definitions, are we using peace officers and sworn personnel as the same term?
We are. The Penal Code defines peace officers in a variety of ways. There's one section within the Penal Code that defines specifically sheriffs, undersheriffs, and deputies, which in this situation is what we're dealing with in with the peace officers at the Sheriff's Department. There are several other code sections within the Penal Code that defines peace officers and gives them different authority. So within what we're talking about today, I believe under the Penal Code 830.1 are the sheriffs, deputy sheriffs, and they're given certain authority under that. There's, for example, peace officer status for probation officers, but they have a different set of authority under another code section.
Okay.
So sworn and peace officers are being used interchangeably today.
Okay, so we're talking specifically, I understand, about 141 individuals who are deputies, senior deputies, or sergeants.
And sergeants, correct.
Okay. Thank you.
County Council, have their light on?
No.
Good. Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Beckler-Schatz, just for point of clarification, currently the Deputy Sheriff's Association also represents correctional officers, dispatchers, and others in the department. That would not change. Is that correct?
That's correct. The election would only apply to deputy sheriffs, senior deputies, and sergeants. They're the only ones who petition.
And they'll be the only ones voting should
they
vote forward with an election.
Okay. Correct.
Thank you.
No other questions from the board? Okay, thank you. At this time, I'm going to ask all those that would be testifying today to please stand and be sworn in by the clerk. And I have no request to speak up here from anybody, so if you have them, please get them up to the clerk as quickly as you can. And anybody else that's going to be sworn in, please, are going to be testifying, please stand to be sworn in. Okay, I have two folks. That's it.
Solemnly swear that the testimony you shall give in this matter shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
Okay, thank you very much. And I suspect this is the only documents that we're going to receive. If there's any other documents, we'd like to have those at this time as well. Okay, let's move on then. At this time, I'll allow the DSA, who are the appellants, to present their position, if they would please. And you have an opening statement and the testimony of witnesses that you have, or the other folks here. You have 20 minutes total. And then I'll allow for 5 minutes at the very end of rebuttal, if you like. So the floor is yours, ma'am.
Thank you kindly. I greatly appreciate that. If I may have the technical assistance of making sure that this particular PowerPoint presentation is able to show on the screen. I note that there's the capacity.
Yes.
Thank you, kindly. Much appreciated. This is, as noted above, the appeal of the San Luis Obispo.
And if I could get your name for the record, please.
Oh, my
please.
Apologies. I do have it on the flashlight. Would you like this?
Why don't we do this? Let's take about a 10-minute break,
that would be much,
and we'll get all set up for this. We'll be back at 10:30.
floor is yours, ma'am.
Thank you very much, and good morning. Members of the Board of Supervisors, my name is Allison Barry Wilkinson, and I am the attorney for the Deputy Sheriff's Association, and this is our appeal that you are here considering today. At the outset, I would like to note that the issue that you have been presented with here today by the management representative is far in excess than that which is permitted by the employee relations policy. So at the outset, we have a dispute over the scope of this particular hearing. We also have a dispute over the procedural manner in which the county council and the management representative have chosen to organize this particular hearing. Because of the limitation on time provided to us, we are in a situation where we are unable, completely unable, to present a full and a complete response and a presentation with respect to our appeal. But we will nonetheless make our best effort to do so. Contained in the materials that you received are some supplemental exhibits, which were not included by the management representative, and directly responsive to the information which they presented. So at the outset, I would note that our procedural objections are laid out extensively in correspondence between myself and Ms. Neal. That's in your material. Correspondence related to the mediation is contained in there. Supplemental information concerning the bargaining units we represent is contained in there as well. So getting to the substance of what we are here to deal with today, I would like to start by correcting some of the substantial misstatements that were made by the management representative in the presentation just provided to you. The first of which is that the management representative said to you here, the Board of Supervisors, that you are to enact the recommendation of the mediator. That is not what you're here today to do. You are here today to determine two issues. Whether or not the petition filed by the Association of San Luis Obispo County Deputy Sheriffs complied with the employee relations policy, and whether the management representative's determination on March 4th of 2009 to accept that petition was appropriate. Beyond that, there is nothing more for this board to consider. The mediator's recommendation, interestingly enough, is not, under your employee relations policy, an item for you to consider. A mediator's recommendation, when not accepted by the parties, ends and terminates the mediatorship itself. So with that, then, what we have is back to the original appeal, which was of the management representative's determination. Beyond that, you have no authority to act. And that's even assuming that what you were advised of with respect to the mediator's recommendation is accurate. It was not. Number one, what they omitted was the fact that at the first mediation, agreement was reached. The parties to this appeal are the Deputy Sheriff's Association and the county. There is nothing in the employee relations policy that permits a non-aggrieved individual, here that would be the ASLO group, to appeal. They have no standing. That's one of our procedural objections. But this agreement that was reached resolved the appeal. In fact, it is in Exhibit C, which is in the binder that was provided to you. The only issue after the mediation was whether or not the election would be conducted by the State Mediation and Conciliation Service. The answer to that was not unless all the parties consented. That was the purpose of the second mediation. The second mediation, in and of itself, did not produce result and agreement. Pursuant to the employee relations policy as set out in Article 2, Section 8, we go back to the appeal. Unless, of course, the appeal was already resolved in the first mediation, which it was. And the employee relations policy, if the State Mediation and Conciliation Service refuses to conduct an election, the county clerk does. So technically, we have the management representative and the county of San Luis Obispo in breach of the agreement that was reached at the first mediation. And that's why we're here today. Second, the recommendation that was provided to you out of the second mediation, interestingly enough, there is not a single piece of documentation that sets it forth. The reason? It was never made. That recommendation was never made to the Deputy Sheriff's Association. In fact, that recommendation, if adopted by this board, not only would be an unlawful act, but it would eliminate the right to vote on whether or not the two units or the unit can be severed. What we have here is a recommendation or a request by the Association of San Luis Obispo County Deputy Sheriffs to sever classifications from existing bargaining units. To do that, they had to file a petition to modify the unit. Why? Because this Board of Supervisors created this unit back in 1996 by a resolution, which is also included in your materials. In order to change that, the employee relations policy has to be strictly adhered to. It was not. The reason? The petition requested a single unit. The actual language of the petition itself, typographical error and all, is in this PowerPoint presentation. Recognition of employee organization. Missing an L, I note. And they specifically said they wanted a unit comprised of peace officer classifications. That's the language they use. That's how their petition was signed, was to create a unit. Not two, but one. That is prohibited by your employee relations policy, which is binding on this Board of Supervisors and the county. In Article 2, Section 6F, the employee relations policy states, supervisory employees and non-supervisory employees shall not be included in the same unit. That is a mandate. Shall not. There is no ambiguity. It is clear. Because the petition sought to create a single unit that included deputy sheriffs, senior deputy sheriffs, and sergeants, it was putting two groups that are not allowed to be together into one unit. Sergeants are supervisors under the county employee relations policy and the resolutions enacted by this board. They are currently in a separate unit, the supervisory law enforcement unit. To take them out requires severance, modification into their own separate unit comprised of sergeants only. The classifications of senior deputy and deputy sheriff are non-supervisory. They are currently included in the law enforcement unit enacted by a Board of Supervisors resolution. Those materials are available to you for your consideration in the exhibits provided. They cannot be mixed under the employee relations policy, and so as a consequence, the approval by then management representative Assistant County Administrator Gail Wilcox was an error. It was not permissible. She was not permitted to have accepted the petition as presented. Was it obligated under the circumstances then to reject it? No. She could have chosen to meet with the petitioning organization, the ASLO group, and ask them to correct their petition or to amend it. She opted not to. As noted in the materials provided to you by the management representative, we pointed this out to the county before they accepted the petition. So ample opportunity was available to correct. They did not take the opportunity. The staff report that was provided to you says that the management representative admits the error. She agrees with the mediator in regard to the necessity for two separate units and recommends that only two separate units can be created. Can you enact that here? No. What it means by that admission is that the current management representative has accurately interpreted the employee relations policy, whereas the prior management relations representative did not. It is that prior representative's determination that is before this Board of Supervisors for appeal. Case law and the government code support the DSA's position. The Organization of Deputy Sheriffs Association versus County of San Mateo decision, which is discussed at length in the letter brief that is included in your materials, supports our petition. Redondo Beach Police Officers Association supports our position. Both of these cases say that while the county cannot specifically prevent the election of a representative, that is, the DSA or the ASLO group, it has the ability to designate the units. So it can say management, supervisors have to be in different units than rank and file. The reason? There are solid public policy reasons to keep those units separate and not have management people representing rank and file employees. These are things that are codified in the government code, in the decisions. The Organization of Deputy Sheriffs Association is a case directly on point because San Mateo County has a similar rule to that of San Luis Obispo County. Interestingly enough, as we continued through this mediation process, the county invited the ASLO group to amend their petition in a letter that is attached as Appellant's Exhibit E. The ASLO group did nothing in response. Setting aside the legal ability of the county on appeal to invite an amendment of the petition, which does not exist, by the way, and is discussed in our materials that are presented to you in writing because of the limitations on time. Setting that aside, they still didn't even bother to amend, which means that ASLO wanted a single group. They want a group that is not in compliance with the employee relations policy. As a consequence, their petition had to be rejected. There are other errors that were contained in the ASLO group's materials. The county employee relations policy has mandatory provisions. In fact, it says that certain things shall accompany the petition. These are not things that give discretion to the management representative to enact or to waive. Why? Because under the government code 3507 and 3507.1, employee relations policies have to be negotiated with the labor groups. And they have to meet and confer over them. We did. We have a document. It's attachment 2 of the county's submission. That document is binding. For the county to change it from a mandate to a permissive would have required them to meet and confer with the Deputy Sheriff's Association. They did not. As a consequence, they had no authority to waive certain technical components. While it may seem that for ease and convenience they should be able to, that's not what this board enacted. That's not what was negotiated. The request shall be accompanied by documents and declarations containing, under Article F, certified copies of the Constitution and bylaws. The County Council admitted that ASLO did not do this. They acknowledged that in what has been included as Attachment 4. It's required by the employee relations policy. Nonetheless, they said, we're not going to do it. We're not going to require it. We'll grant the petition anyway. That is not a petition in compliance with the employee relations policy. Other ASLO errors that were admitted by the county but nonetheless ignored or waived despite the mandate is that the subsection K says that a detailed financial statement by a certified public accountant must be provided. Shall be, not maybe, shall be. It was not provided. County Council acknowledged that. It's included in the materials that is there. And yet, again, they waived it without ever first negotiating alternate procedures with the Deputy Sheriff's Association, or for that matter, any other labor organization within this county. Other errors, the request shall contain a complete statement of all relative facts, wasn't there, didn't include it, was acknowledged by County Council that was a failure on ASLO's part, but nonetheless ignored. These failures of the petition compel rejection. That was the management representative's obligation when the petition was presented. They would have to reject, advise as low of the reasons why, and then if there was still time remaining in the period, permit correction or resubmission. The time has now expired. In fact, there is a question about whether or not the petition itself was initially timely. That is discussed at length in the letter brief provided to you. But due to the limitations of time, it will not be discussed orally here today. I will say, however, that we incorporate by reference, as though fully set forth, everything contained in the materials provided to you in order to be efficient, since I've been limited to 20 minutes. The management representative has a clear ministerial duty to follow the mandates of the employee relations policy. Where it is unclear or where there are no ambiguities, then they can interpret or apply. But when it says shall, it means shall. And there is nothing that can be waived absent the employee organizations agreeing to it. The management representative, therefore, by acting without actually having a conformed and compliant petition, acted in an unlawful manner, unilaterally acted, and that abuse of discretion, that abuse, failure to follow the law, that noncompliance should not be upheld by this Board of Supervisors. With that in mind, I would reserve any time I have remaining for my rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Scrobridge, do you want to speak now?
Or reserve my...
Or you can reserve? Okay. Let's go to the real parties in interest at this point. I'm sorry, did you have a question?
Good morning, and thank you very much for allowing us to participate today in this proceeding as real parties in interest. My name is Larry Katz, and I represent the Association of San Luis Obispo County Deputy Sheriffs. The characteristic that best describes ASLOs is patience. It's been more than 11 months since the group petitioned to modify their present bargaining group, and still the subsequent representation election has yet to come to a vote. In January of last year, the group petitioned to be a recognized employee organization and also petitioned to modify their then-current bargaining unit to create one that consists solely of full-time sworn peace officers. The DSA is very good at trying to raise arguments that are not always germane to the actual issue. It seems somewhat lost in all the presentations that the employee relations policy is the controlling factor in deciding how the process is to be conducted. We have a differing view on the process and would like to try to clearly and concisely represent the procedure we believe is appropriate in dictating the modification process. First, it's important to point out that this is a modification. The DSA has continuously used the term decertification in describing the process. This is misleading and inaccurate. When it comes to the employee relations policy, terms like modification and decertification are technical terms that have very specific meanings. They are not interchangeable, and different rules apply to each term. Make no mistake, this is a modification and not a decertification. In filing to be a recognized employee organization, it has always been the intent of ASLOs to create a new bargaining unit, not to attempt to take over representation of the unit that is presently represented by the DSA. With that being said, we would like to walk you through what we believe to be the appropriate process and give you reasons for it. On January 26, 2009, ASLO filed documents requesting to be a recognized employee organization. Along with the recognition petition, they, as deputy sheriffs, also filed a petition seeking a modification, creating a bargaining unit comprised solely of full-time peace officers. The members of ASLOs are currently in the bargaining unit represented by the DSA, which is composed of employees who are not all full-time peace officers. Pursuant to Section 3508 of the Government Code, it mandates that public safety employees who request to be in a bargaining unit that does not commingle them with non-peace officers have the absolute statutory right to be their own bargaining unit. Therefore, ASLOs sought to establish a new bargaining unit that severed them from the DSA. In other words, it sought to carve out a subgroup consisting only of deputy sheriffs while leaving the remaining employees in the original bargaining unit. If this was a decertification, the petitioning employees would be attempting to change the representation of the entire bargaining unit. This is not the intent here. As the DSA will continue, no matter what the results of this hearing, to represent the employees who remain in the current bargaining unit. The modification acts to create a totally new bargaining unit, and it will remain to be seen who will eventually represent the peace officer group only group. This distinction between a modification and decertification is critically important and will be later discussed. When a modification petition and its accompanying signatures are filed, it is then the duty of the county to determine whether the representation unit is appropriate. Under normal circumstances, if a group of employees seek a modification, the county has broad powers to accept or deny the modification and wide discretion in granting or not granting the request. Normally, it evaluates factors like community of interest or the desire not to fragment the bargaining units in determining whether the proposed representation unit is appropriate. In this situation, the county's options were more limited than normal due to the requirements of Section 3508 of the Government Code. The Government Code section reduced the county's discretion and essentially supersedes its judgment, as the petitioning public safety employees had an absolute right to the modification. After the recognition and modification documents were filed, it was reviewed during February of last year, and on March 4, 2009, the county provided notice that the unit was proper. In reading the employee relations policy, it is the county's obligation to affirmatively accept or reject the modification. If the decision is affirmative, there is nothing in the provisions of the ERP that directs for an election to be held by the affected employees to ratify the modification. The establishment of the modification is within the purview of the county. The ERP directs the county to make the determination, and there's nothing that instructs it to relinquish that authority to the employees. The county, in its March 4th notice, indicated that the proposed representation unit was proper, and that is the determining factor in establishing the modification. This determination is well within the authority of the county. Indeed, if ASLOS had not petitioned for the modification, the county had the authority on its own to propose or to seek a modification if it deemed it in the best interest of the county. Section 7 of the ERP allows for a modification directly by the county if they determine a new unit would be appropriate. Alternatively, the employees are allowed to petition for it. In other words, placing deputy sheriffs in their own bargaining unit could have been done unilaterally by the county or through a petition-driven process by the affected employees, as it was done in the present situation. Quite simply, the county has broad power to declare the modification appropriate, and as stated, there is no section in the ERP that indicates a vote on the decision is necessary. To require a vote is simply not part of the rules. In our interpretation of the ERP, it is our interpretation of the ERP that if the modification is deemed proper, then the next stage of the proceeding is to determine what party will be the exclusive bargaining representative of the newly created bargaining unit. It is our belief that the unit appropriateness is proper and the modification has been accepted. No matter who eventually represents the new unit, it should be understood that the new unit exists and the deputy sheriffs are no longer members of the prior and existing DSA unit. The only means by which the deputies would remain in the prior unit is if the modification is rejected on this appeal. Otherwise, the modification is complete, and the sole remaining question is to decide who represents the new group. Going back to March, once the modification notice was sent out to the relevant parties, the DSA had the choice to appeal the decision. On March 5, 2009, pursuant to Section 8, the DSA in fact did appeal. And that's why we're here today. In addition, the DSA had the option simultaneously to file a competing request to be considered the recognized employee organization for the newly formed bargaining group. Therefore, if the appeal failed and they wanted to be considered as a potential group to represent the new bargaining unit, under the ERP clearly states in Section 3 of Article 2 that it was necessary for them to submit within 30 days a challenging petition indicating they wish to be on the representation ballot. This desire to be considered as the representatives also required that it be accompanied by a petition that included a minimum of 40% of the affected employees stating their interest in being represented by the challenging group. The DSA appealed the modification, which is the focus of this hearing, but they failed to submit any challenging petition. They had the opportunity to file the petition, and their failure to do so prevents them from being on the ballot when the question of representation is addressed. Section 3 of Article 2 clearly delineates the open period when a challenging petition must be filed. It states, quote, within 30 days of the date written, notice was given to affected employees that a valid recognition petition for an appropriate unit has been filed. Any other employee organization may file a competing request to be formally acknowledged as the recognized employee organization to be the exclusive bargaining representative of the employees in the same or an overlapping unit. It goes on to state that the challenge is accomplished by, quote, filing a petition evidencing proof of employee support in a unit claimed to be appropriate of at least 40%. The DSA never filed any petition as mandated in the ERP, and certainly never filed a petition with 40% of the affected employees, demonstrating their support for the DSA. The DSA merely filed an appeal of the modification. Once the modification was accepted, the DSA, if they wished to be considered as a potential representative for the newly formed bargaining unit, had the obligation to file a petition, which they completely failed to do so. According to the ERP, if no party challenges the initial petitioning party, an election is held to determine representation with the name of ASLOS, and also, according to the ERP, no organization. It would have ASLOS name on it and no organization. Given that the unit has been declared appropriate, the affected employees in the Peace Officer-Only Bargaining Unit must now select a recognized employee group to represent their interests. If no organization prevails, there would need to be another election with eligible groups again being entitled to submit qualifying petitions. So when the election happens, ASLO's name should be on it, no organization, or essentially none of the above. If no organization prevails, then all eligible parties can file challenging petitions, and there has to be another election. They never filed the initial challenging petition. Their name should not be on it. The DSA wants you to believe that there is a need for two elections, one to ratify the modification, and then one to decide what group will be the exclusive bargaining representative. The rules do not call for the modification vote, and the record shows that they failed to take the appropriate action to have their name placed on the ballot. As stated earlier, I mentioned that there's a critical difference between a modification and a decertification. If this was a decertification, it's customary that the incumbent representative should be on the ballot. The incumbent needs to be on the ballot in a decertification because they are the party that efforts are being made to reject. This is not a decertification, and under the provisions of the modification, it clearly does not contain any language requiring the incumbent to be on the ballot. Here, in a modification, it's an entirely new bargaining unit that has no prior representation. ASLOS is not trying to take over representation of the DSA. They are just trying to be the recognized bargaining unit, or recognized employee group for the new modified group. According to the ERP, which controls the situation, the only way the DSA can be on the ballot is to follow the requirements set forth in Section 3 of Article 2. They made no effort to do so. Rather, they seemingly placed all their eggs in the basket that contends the modification is improper. If the DSA appeal is denied and the decision that the unit modification is appropriate stands, then the only process that moves forward is to hold an election which determines what recognized employee group represents the newly formed bargaining unit comprised solely of deputy sheriffs. This process is now in the 12th month since it was initially filed. The members of ASLOS who sought to modify their current bargaining unit so they could be in one comprised solely of full-time peace officers deserve to have this matter proceed in a timely manner. The modified unit is appropriate, and the county should move forward with a timely election so the deputy sheriffs can determine what employee group will be representing their newly formed bargaining unit. I don't know on the time. It wasn't set.
Have about eight minutes.
Okay, I'd like to defer the rest of my opening statement to the Secretary of ASLOS, Daniel Andotail.
And I'm sorry, sir, were you sworn in?
It's part of the opening statement, but if you want to swear him, he's not acting as a witness.
Does he need to be sworn in? No, okay. Your name, please, sir.
Daniel Andotail, spelled A-N-D-O-E-T-O-E.
Thank you.
I'm the Secretary of the Ad Hoc Board of the Association of San Luis Obispo County Deputy Sheriffs. My statements are strictly limited to the page 3 of the staff report where the configuration of the ballot is concerned. What you're looking at is putting the DSA on the ballot, which is setting a dangerous precedent for any subsequent employee modifications, certifications, whatever you want to do with your ERP. If you were to allow that to happen, you would also open the door for probation, DA investigators, or even SLO-SIA to be on that same ballot, because there is no standard set of 40% of the affected bargaining unit petitioned from the affected members. So the DSA could step in and say they want to be on the ballot. SLO-SIA could step in and say they want to be on the ballot. You don't want to set that precedent. You want to follow your ERP and not open that door. And that's basically all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, with that, we'll go to the public comment portion of this. And I have two requests to speak. Mr. Strobridge, followed by Mr. Perry.
Good morning, Honorable Chair. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
And fellow board members. My name is Dale Strobridge. I'm president of the San Luis Obispo Deputy Sheriff's Association. The agenda item C2 summary accurately describes the issue before the board today, and may I laboriously read that for you. Hearing to consider an appeal by the Deputy Sheriff's Association regarding the labor management representative's decision to accept a petition for recognition from the Association of San Luis Obispo County Deputy Sheriffs to determine which organization will be the exclusive bargaining unit for sworn members or sworn employees and set an election for recognition. The labor management representative improperly and unlawfully accepted the solicitor's petition. The labor management representative's staff report today improperly expands the scope of this appeal hearing. The only determination that this board can make today are, one, whether in filing this petition on January 28, 2009, SLO-SIDS complied with the requirements for acknowledgement as an exclusively recognized employee organization recognition petition. Two, whether the representation unit proposed, a single unit comprised of both supervisory and non-supervisory sworn classifications, is an appropriate unit in accordance with Section 6 of Article 2 of the Employee Relations Policy. On the basis of the San Luis Obispo Deputy Sheriff's Association letter brief and DSA counsel's presentation, the DSA respectfully submits that the answer to both these questions is an emphatic no, and requests that the Board of Supervisors grant the appeal and overturn the management representative's determination to accept the associate's petition. Additional comments are in response to SLO-SIDS counsel. SLO-SIDS patients. My comment to that is DSA patience in this last 12 months has been at best trying. The DSA has proposed a unit and unit modification of both the supervisory and law enforcement units, followed by a decertification vote of each unit during two mediation sessions in accordance to the mediator's recommendation and following the employee relations policy, with both DSA and SLO-SIDS on the ballot. SLO-SIDS rejected both of those mediation proposals by DSA simply because they do not want the DSA to be represented on the ballot. Most recently, during settlement proposal exchanges, the DSA again proposed a unit modification vote of the supervisory and the law enforcement units, followed by a decertification vote of each unit, with both the DSA and SLO-SIDS on the ballot, both rejected by SLO-SIDS within 2 hours of submittal of that that proposal. The DSA has patiently set forth, time and time again, a template in accordance to the employee relations policy on how to achieve a unit modification of an existing employee organization followed by decertification. And SLO-SIDS has not followed the employee relations policy, nor have they followed the Myers-Milius Brown Act. In closing, I respectfully request that you honor our appeal and reject the SLO-SIDS petition. Thank you.
Mr. Strobridge, Mr. Perry?
Good
morning. Tony Perry, DSA, advisor to the DSA Board of Directors. The various staff reports and county council letters submitted within this matter before this board are both complicated and potentially confusing. Challenging organization, the ASLOs have failed to submit a petition in compliance with the ERP. Staff will lead this board to believe that they have liberally construed the ERP to carry out its purpose and intent. This is misleading. What is available for liberal construction is only where ambiguity exists in its policy. Instead, what has occurred is a waiver of mandatory ERP requirements to carry out an agenda advantageous to the county, the ultimate goal being to reopen negotiations that are otherwise precluded by an existing MOU. Again, there is a distinction between liberal construction of ambiguity versus waiver of ERP requirements. The waiver granted by the management representative was illegal and admits to an unfair labor practice. The petition submitted, albeit deficient, aims to disregard the exclusive representative status of the incumbent recognized employee organization, the DSA. They failed to submit for unit modification for establishment of a new appropriate unit as required. The manner in which submitted fails to recognize the requirement of decertification of the DSA as a recognized employee organization currently under contract with the county for the positions that the ASLs want to represent. DSA is in a position of incumbency on those positions. The employees petitioning to create a new unit have done so with the assistance of counsel by the California Organization of Police and Sheriffs. The requirements contained within the ERP are simple and articulated within the policy. However, they chose to disregard the requirements while complying with some requirements while complying with others. They erroneously rely on Government Code 3508 as a trump card, superseding all other MMBA provisions and ERP requirements. 3508 is nothing more than one of many MMBA provisions that can be carried out and must be by harmonizing 3508, MMBA, and ERP provisions. All of these provisions are compatible. The ERP is the local mechanism by which a 3508 petition must be submitted. Staff is not permitted to allow waiver of mandatory submission requirements, nor are they allowed to unilaterally interpret its terms to their own advantage. The DSA has been aggrieved and prejudiced by the county's acceptance of a deficient petition and petitioner's own fault of lack of clarity in their intent. In fact, the petitioner's own recognition petition was defective and confirmed by their signed proofs of employee support, evidence in the first instance that the prejudicial interpretation of staff exceeded the intent of the petitioner itself. The petitioner's intent was nothing more than an attempt to create a combined unit of supervisory and non-supervisory deputy sheriffs, which cannot be legally created. The Board of Supervisors must reject this petition as not conforming with the ERP. The burden will then shift to the petitioner to resubmit their petition within the clear mandates of MMBA and the ERP, while respecting the DSA status as the incumbent recognized employee organization representing the employees subject to this petition. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Perry. Okay, at this time, I'm going to allow the appellant for some concluding remarks, if so choose. And please. And I think she had a couple of minutes left from the last one, so I'll give you about 8 minutes, if you would.
Thank
please.
You.
That's fine.
About 8 minutes?
About 8 minutes.
Okay.
There you go.
I'll take the about. Hopefully I won't use all eight, because you all have been patient here today, and that is very much appreciated. With that in mind, I would like to respond to the ASLO's representations as made during the course of their proceeding. What I find very interesting by Mr. Katz's presentation on behalf of the ASLO is that they say the employee relations policy has to be carefully followed. It is the controlling factor. Even their secretary said so when he came up here to speak. But only as to the DSA, certainly not to them. Because if you notice, they made no effort to correct the failures that were contained in their original petition. By virtue of that, they conceded the fact that they did not comply with the mandates of the employee relations policy. What they did do here was clarify something they never said in their petition. And that is what their intent was, which was to create a unit modification. Unit modifications under the Employee Relations Policy, Section Article 2, Section 7, is a very specific process. It requires upon the petition that the modification occur. They are, yes, indeed, by their petition, trying to sever these units from classifications represented by the Deputy Sheriff's Association. What they didn't tell you was what the law actually says. All Government Code Section 3508, which was relied upon heavily by ASLO, states is that peace officers can be represented by an organization that only represents peace officers. It is silent as to unit determination. And in fact, by virtue of the case law that has interpreted Government Code Section 3508, it is not the petitioner's determination. It is to be submitted by the county and determined ultimately what is an acceptable unit. How do they do that? By enacting local rules. They enact local rules under 3507 of the Government Code. That's what your employee relations policy is. Under Organization of Deputy Sheriff's Association, they are allowed to specify what is an acceptable unit versus representation. So to sever the classifications from the existing bargaining unit would require a vote under your employee relations policy, not unilateral action by this board. Once modified, then it's a question of who represents them. By Board of Supervisors resolution, the Deputy Sheriff's Association represents those classifications. If they are segregated into a separate unit, as a matter of law, they are still represented by the Deputy Sheriff's Association. They do not automatically become unrepresented. Rather, they remain represented by the Deputy Sheriff's Association, and this is where the ASLO group gets confused. If they are represented by the Deputy Sheriff's Association, the only process by which they can unrepresent is decertification. According to the ASLO group, we had to file a petition for recognition. Why would we do that? We already represent them. Once the unit is modified, according to your employee relations policy, then within 30 days, we file a petition. So the first thing that has to happen is modification, severance from the unit by way of a vote. Once the unit is modified, that is the express language of the employee relations policy, then a petition for recognition has to be submitted with proof of employee support. The time for filing that petition has not yet occurred because the unit has not yet been modified. Until modified, they remain represented by the Deputy Sheriff's Association. They got it all mixed up, which is exactly what happened in their petition. The only authority cited in the ASLO petition for what they were trying to do was Article 2, Section 6I, which is not Article 7 or Article 5, modification, decertification, or even Article 1, which is recognition. They cited, as was acknowledged by the County Council, an inappropriate section. With that, then, they now here for the first time have ever clarified what they intended to do. The fact that they never said it until this hearing, over 11 months, they have failed to say what they intended to do clearly and precisely, is exactly the reason why the management representative should have rejected the petition, and exactly the reason why this Board of Supervisors should grant the DSA's appeal. With that in mind, again here today, your responsibility is solely to determine, one, whether or not the proposed representation unit is an appropriate one. They have already said they want a combined unit of supervisors and non-supervisors. Your employee relations policy says that can't happen. As a consequence, it is not an appropriate unit. Under the case decision cited in our letter brief and discussed extensively, the law permits such a provision of your employee relations policy. If you choose to change that, you must first meet and confer with the affected organizations, which would include the DSA and any other labor organization within this county. Second, the only other issue before you is whether or not there has been compliance with the requirements for acknowledgement as an exclusively recognized employee organization recognition petition. There has not been compliance. We highlighted the procedural and technical defects, but more importantly, ABLO cannot represent the classifications in the unit presented because they didn't give 40% of the entire unit. They can't do a recognition petition until after the unit has been modified. Once modified, then those petitions are filed, then you show proof of employee support, and then a vote as to who gets to be on, who gets to be the exclusive bargaining representative is required. What ABLO seeks to do is to overturn, set aside, disregard the Board of Supervisors resolution that enacted the existing law enforcement units merely by the filing of a petition. And they cite their signatures on that petition as evidence of their support. I'm confident many of you have come out of a grocery store and had somebody shove a petition in your face and ask for your signature, giving due consideration to the fact that all your signature does is compel a vote. Whether you agree or disagree with the principle asserted, all a petition does is give you the right to vote on what your unit should be. That's what their petition should have been in the first place, unit modification, then recognition. That would have been strict compliance with the employee relations policy, which contains mandates and is clear, a ministerial duty of the management representative and this Board of Supervisors. With that, we respectfully submit that you grant our appeal, reverse the management representative's decision, to accept the petition, and proceed forward from there. Thank you.
Mr. Katz, you'd like? I believe the questions we're going to get after this.
Thank you.
Sir.
On March 4th, 2009, the management representative, or the then management representative, determined that the modification was appropriate. That's the first stage. The second stage, then, is that created the new bargaining unit. DSA still exists. They're still over there representing corrections, dispatchers, anyone in the Sheriff's Department. A new unit exists now of peace officer only. Once that new unit was existed and the modification was determined to be appropriate, an election has to occur to determine who's going to represent them. As the petitioning group, the ERP allows their name to be on there. They put in 70% of the affected employees on their petitions that said they wanted to be represented by ASLO. If anyone wanted to challenge it, they had 30 days to challenge it. No one challenged it. That means an election should go forward, ASLO's name should be on there, and no organization should be on there. I don't want to restate my position. I don't want to be redundant about it. If there's any questions, if you have for the rest of my time, if you'd like to ask any questions about our position, but otherwise, we would ask that you accept the management representative's recommendation, except for the issue about the ballot. The ERP, I think, mandates you to put on there ASLO's name and no organization. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Katz, and we will probably have questions. We're
okay.
Going to go to the management representative at this point to present their concluding remarks.
There are a lot of disagreements, obviously, and a lot of those disagreements are based on the details of the employee relations policy and, you know, could things have been done differently way back a year ago? Possibly, but they weren't. And we did try to reach an agreement because both sides, from the county's perspective, had problems with what they presented. But the overarching issue for me as the management representative and for the county, I believe, is that we have an obligation to make sure that employees have the right to choose their own representative. And we have here 70% of peace officers indicating to us that they want to exercise that right. And so we can help both sides cure the particular technicalities, problems that were in their individual responses to this issue by moving forward with my recommendations.
Thank you, Council.
Mr. Chairman and Board Members, Warren Jensen, County Council. You've heard different approaches to characterizing the situation. Mr. Katz says this was a modification. Ms. Barry Wilkinson insists that it has to be a decertification followed by a recognition process. And I think what the underlying problem here is that our employee relations policy does not expressly and specifically address a severance of the type that's being sought here. It just doesn't. And you heard in the attempts to fit the rules to one or another type of description of the process. What we've done is we've looked at the rules and the overall purpose of the rules and recommended that the management rep do the best she can. Now, there has been commentary about the supposed mandatory provisions of the ERP, that there's no flexibility. The word shall means that there's no option to waive informalities or minor discrepancies, but Ms. Neal can point you to the provision on that.
Yeah, I'm Rita Neal from County Council. A couple of issues, again, going back to the purpose of the policy, which is to give employees their choice. And if the board would look at the policy under Article 5, it says that this resolution, this policy, shall be interpreted so as to carry out the purposes set forth, which is the purpose to give the employees the right to choose who they want to be represented. When you start talking about recognition, decertification, and modification, our policy isn't as clear as we would like. Article 2, Section 1 sets out how you're to file a recognition petition. Then you move to Section 5 of Article 2, which says procedure for decertification. And within that section, it indicates that an employee organization can satisfy a decertification petition by filing a recognition petition under the prior section. Then you move to Section 7, which deals with modification petitions. And it also says that a modification petition can be filed in the form of a recognition petition. So what you what you have basically is you have, here's how you file a recognition petition. If you want to file a decertification, it looks like a recognition petition. If you want to file a modification petition, it looks like a recognition petition. So as you throw these terms around, it's easy on one hand to say it doesn't fit into this square peg, but on the other hand, in order to interpret the policy in conjunction with its purpose, the management representative determined that the petition that was filed was sufficient under the policy. I hope that clarifies it a little bit for you.
I think
you.
We'll have to go next door to see if we can get some black robes. I have a number of lights on, so Mr. Asajian first and then Mr. Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. O'Neill, Ms. Barry Wilkinson, they brought to our attention shall contain, shall, and when it says shall, we must, having said that, why would we consider giving waivers when the word shall is included in a sentence?
What we determined in some of the, I think, what I would call discrepancies that were pointed out in the petition, for example, not having a financial statement that was certified by a CPA, we believe that it substantially complied with the policy. This organization, the ASLOs, had been newly created. They had just opened a bank account. So the credit union submitted a letter verifying that they had a bank account and that what the amount of the funds were. There would have been no way to have a certified financial statement because they really hadn't expended anything. They had simply opened the bank account. So that, we felt, substantially complied. Also, from our perspective, some of those requirements within the ERP were also to protect the county's interest, to make sure that an organization that's filing a petition is financially sound, has the support of the proposed members. So in our view, some of the discrepancies that were pointed out weren't significant enough to reject the petition.
So we do have the discretion to make that decision based on the argument you bring forward. The other point she makes, again, she meaning Ms. Mary Wilkinson, that our policy doesn't allow the separation of supervisor from non-supervisors. If our policy doesn't allow that, how can we look into it favorably?
Yeah, good point. The policy does say specifically that supervisors and non-supervisors cannot be in the same bargaining unit. And from a management representative standpoint, that makes a lot of sense. There was a case that was pointed out in Ms. Barry Wilkinson's presentation entitled Redondo Beach, Police Officers Association versus City of Redondo Beach. And we had initially taken the position, and this case supports, that peace officers under 3508, because they can be in their own unit, Redondo Beach case supports that a peace officer organization can include supervisors and non-supervisors. So the case law supported that. Now, as we understood from the ASLOs, they were supportive as well of the modification being supervisors and non-supervisors, which makes it easier to handle. So you can do it either way under the law for peace officers. And we relied on that case initially when the decision was made.
Mr. Chair, if, I don't know what time you'll allow us to ask questions. To
yeah, we're going to go right on down the line and ask whatever questions we have. But
yeah.
Do you have other questions for legal counsel at this point?
I do, actually.
Okay, let's go to them, and then we'll go to the other questions. Mr. Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Ms. Neal, you'd referenced Section 7, and I was reading that a bit ago, and the second paragraph is actually very interesting to me. If we were to assume that the best path through this ambiguous situation is to treat this as a modification in the form of recognition petition. There's also a paragraph in there that says the management representative may, on her own motion, propose during that an established unit be modified. And I was just curious whether you thought that had any play here.
We do think it plays here. As you saw in her presentation, the opinion changed some as this process emerged, and we felt that the management representative has that discretion to determine the unit modification, which in fact is part of her recommendation today, that it be modified to include peace officers, supervisors, and non-supervisors. And we feel the language within Section 7 gives her authority to do that.
Support to do that. The other one was, again, very clear statements made, as attorneys often do, about what's right and what's wrong. But in reading the response in Section 2, the county response to a recognition petition, the management representative seems to have leeway to confer with the petitioning organization. And I don't read any definitive grounds upon which the management representative has to come to a rejection or an acceptance decision on that, that there's a level of judgment that's appropriate and intended in that section. Do I read that correctly?
You do read that correctly, and I think as we put in the board report, that the management representative, even though maybe there's not emails and correspondence, continue to have numerous discussions with these parties and with the ASLOs as to some of the discrepancies that were pointed out, some of the other issues, so that we could move us to a conclusion to give the employees that right of choice. So the management representative, from our perspective, within the policy, has discretion to work with the parties, has discretion to come up with a resolution that will serve the purpose of the policy.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Gibson, Mr. Patterson, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. A follow-up, Ms. Neal, regarding the original petition that requested one unit to represent both the supervisorial as well as the line staff, and then the recommendation before us today to actually separate that into two. Is it problematic that the original petition only stated the one and yet we're recommending that it be changed to two. Is that an issue?
I don't think it's problematic. I think the board could do one of two things. You could accept the unit with supervisors and non-supervisors based on the Redondo Beach case, or you could, as the management representative recommended, recognize both a supervisor and a non-supervisor. One thing that probably or likely could occur if you recognized one unit today is the management representative could down the line say, you know what, this isn't working from a labor relations standpoint, and I would recommend that supervisors and non-supervisors be broken out. So I think your best bet today, our recommendation would be you go with two units.
Okay, thank you. And then there was also reference made to the board's resolution recognizing that the DSA represent the sworn officers as well as others. How does the act today, any action that we take today, how is that affected by that resolution?
What it does is any action you would take today would likely set the stage for an election. So what the Board of Supervisors, I think back in 96 or 86, I can't quite remember the date, did was allow, which is allowable under the law and the policy, to have peace officers and non-peace officers in one unit. But now our peace officers, or some of them, are telling us they don't want to be in a mixed unit. That would be the purpose of the election as well.
Okay, and then my final question is regarding who should appear on the ballot. One side says that, you know, the recommendation is that there be three options on the ballot, and the process as described by the AFLOs, saying that the process dictates that only they and no representation be shown on the ballot. And we have that discretion to determine which way we go with that?
That's probably one of the most difficult questions before you today, because it, from either party's perspective, it depends how you want to apply the policy. You can strictly apply it so that it benefits one side, or you can strictly apply it so that it benefits another side. There is a very valid argument that perhaps the DSA should have filed a challenging petition once the ASLOs filed their petition for modification. So their failure to do that and instead to file an appeal brought the question, who goes on the ballot, which is why we recommended that they both go on the ballot. That was after hours of conversations with the mediator. And the mediator had, I think, 30 years' experience in labor relations, and he felt in order to give all the employees a choice, having both parties as well as the no organization on the ballot would be the fairest way to proceed. So this board could, you know, decide today to add, put them all on the ballot, or you could decide there wasn't a proper challenging petition filed and only have ASLOs and no representation.
And on DSA's side of that, whether DSA should be on the ballot, they make the point that they're the incumbent organization, and they thought they didn't need to petition, so not totally clear-cut.
Okay. It's all gray.
Which is a good color, by the way. So, thank you for that explanation.
Certainly.
I guess because it is all gray, I guess the concern that I have is from the legal position. We've had suggestions that the board doesn't have the authority to do this. Legal counsel is suggesting that we do. And so we have pretty broad discretion here. Okay. Mr. Hill, do you have a...
Not a question.
Okay, dude, I think the board has questions of some of the appellants or the...
If I may, Mr.
Chair. Mr. Sajjan?
Ms. Mary Wilkinson, if I may ask you, ma'am.
Yes, thank you, sir.
In your opening remarks, and I stand to be corrected if I don't quote you correctly, you mentioned that if there was a consent of how the elections will proceed, we might not be here today. So there wasn't consent in the very beginning as how to proceed with the elections. Am I understanding you clearly, or can you clarify what you meant by that?
Certainly. Had the petition been clear that it was seeking to modify a unit, then it would have proceeded to an election of the actual people within those classifications as to whether they wanted to sever. Sever is the same as modification. You modify something by severing out classifications. And so when I identified that had it been properly done, then there would have gone straight to an election. That is accurate, because if they are doing what they are saying they are doing, which is modifying the unit by severing, then it goes to an election. And consistent with the employee relations policy, which gives a right of free choice, then people get to choose, do I want to be in this unit or I don't want to be in this other unit? Now that election still has to come to this board for ratification and resolution, because the prior resolution saying they're in an appropriate unit, which is all classifications, not just sworn, would have to be amended, revised, overruled. A new resolution would have to be put into place. So the mere placement of a signature on a petition, and even the mere election, even the management representative's recommendation, can't overrule this Board of Supervisors' prior resolution.
Thank you, ma'am. Another question to follow up Ms. O'Neill's comment that the gray area where you don't choose to be on the ballot, if this was to move forward, what do you have a choice at this time as what direction we can go if we choose to go to see elections? Would you want to be on the ballot, and how? Or this might not end up with our...
I suppose the answer to that is it's all gray and it depends, which is the typical lawyer's answer, right? It's all gray and it depends. Ultimately, first what has to happen is the modification. So the vote for the modification would occur. Then we could decide whether we want to be on the ballot or not. Do we at present maintain a position that we have to be on the ballot? Absolutely.
Allow me to interrupt you here for a second so I can understand you more clearly. Choice to be on the ballot or not, it's based on the modifications.
Correct. So first you have to modify, because the unit as it exists is represented by us, and it contains all of these classifications together. In order for there to be a new unit, it has to be modified. The modification is either by way of an election or by management representative's recommendation. I note earlier there was a question about whether you can just act because it's the management representative's recommendation. I would refer you to page 6 of my letter brief, because it's not just the recommendation. There are technical requirements for that recommendation that have to be met. It has to be done in a specific time frame. It has to be done after meeting and conferring with the affected organization. All of that is clearly spelled out and in Section 7 of the Employee Relations Policy. So the management representative's recommendation that the units be severed cannot be enacted by this board, because that compliance has not occurred. Separately, until they vote, until that modification occurs, then there's no question of who represents the unit.
Thank you, ma'am. Mr. Chair, I don't know about timing.
Go ahead.
I would like to ask Mr. Katz about your take on the modification that we've been discussing here.
What we're hearing here is that some lawyers like to make things gray. I'd rather make it black and white.
Then you'll be out of business.
Well, but at least I'd be on the right side.
Okay.
Here's the deal, is that this is a modification. These are sworn peace officers. There has never been any desire and intent on this group, ASLO, to go in and take over the group that the DSA represents. They wanted to form their own unit that was comprised solely of peace officers. In doing that, you modify. You don't decertify, you modify. And they modified. They carved out a group, and they said, this is what the group's going to be. Then under your ERP, it's very clear that management representative at that time had the right, the broad power, the discretion to say, either this is appropriate or it's not. She ruled that it was affirmative. It was appropriate. The modification occurred. The modification's there. They appealed the modification. That's why we're here today. If you determine that there's a modification and everything was fine with the modification, then we have to go to the election. And where you say it's gray, it's not gray. It's very, very clear in Section 3 that you have to file a challenging petition. They didn't file it. So for them to have the option, do you want to be on the ballot or not, they already chose not to be on the ballot.
You answered my question, and
right.
I apologize for my comment earlier.
I'm trying to make it as clear as possible.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Are there questions of either of the appellant or the... Okay, thank you.
Thank you,
gentlemen. Appreciate it.
Thank you kindly.
Well, it appears to me that, the end result, whatever the case may be, whatever direction we go here, is that there will be an election at some point. It's just the procedural aspect of getting there, whether we do it now or whether this takes place later. Mr. Patterson, or I'm sorry, Mr. Hill, you're up.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree. Sort of unfortunate that we're here, and regrettable, I think, that there's this internal friction that couldn't resolve itself internally. We are in divorce court. But it seems that the most civil way to resolve this, I mean, I really think that there's a lot of legalistic technicalities that reached a level of just, you know, pedantic obstacles to what inevitably is the only way to resolve this, and that is to have an election. The group of sworn officers have submitted a petition that overwhelmingly suggests that they want to have their own representative unit. I think the recommendations of Ms. Schatz make sense to me, which is, you know, to some degree a little bit is objected to by the ASLOs, which I do think DSA needs to be on the ballot. I think that's the most fair way to do so. So that's essentially where I'm headed. It seems that this is really we don't want to be overly involved in the internal matter of our sheriff's department and their representation. I think most people realize that they, you know, all of the people in the department, from the jail to the deputies and the cars and the investigators, do a good job for our community. So let's let them resolve this internally by having an election. And then our management can deal with it from there. So that's my opinion on it.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I concur with Supervisor Hill. I think that, there was an opportunity, or there has been the actual act of interpreting the employment or employee relations policy in a variety of ways. It is somewhat complicated, and I really have to defer to our professionals in human resources and our county council as to whether or not the process was adequately followed. And we can nitpick this to death, I think, and never get to the bottom of it. And I think the ultimate best solution is to let the folks that actually are our sworn officers decide for themselves who should best represent them. And it's unfortunate that it's taken a year to work through this process, but I think that we're at a point now where we can allow the process to move forward and let our sworn officers decide their own fate in terms of who represents them. I've heard enough to support our staff's recommendation on how to move forward from here.
Mr. Gibson, would that be a motion? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Would that be a motion, Mr. Patterson?
Well, I can certainly make it one, that we deny the appeal and accept staff's recommendation as given.
No. I'll second that. I do think it would be useful for us to acknowledge a couple things. I understand we don't have a resolution specific to this. We are acting outside of that format, but still, I think it's important that we acknowledge findings and reference them for the record, because it's clear to me in the discussion, I appreciate the discussion of both representatives, both organizations, that our employee relations policy does not cover this situation adequately. There are ambiguities in it, and it's, to me, one of the sort of expected results of writing complex policy is that there will inevitably be a case that it doesn't cover. I think we have looked at efforts by both organizations to engage that policy. I think there have been there's been testimony here that there have been procedural imperfections on both sides, and that simply make this a complex situation. So I would suggest, and if maybe we could just simply have this on the record as a bit of discussion, that we do acknowledge that our employee relations policy does not cover the situation that we're faced with. That we do find within the policy, though, that we have authority and sufficient discretion, particularly within the representative's ability to modify a unit, to take the action that staff recommends. And that the decision, if, assuming that we ratify the motion made, that the decision is based on the Article 5, which permits a liberal interpretation in an effort to give employees the right to choose their representation. So I think that in the gray fog of this particular situation, I think we do have to rely on common sense, and I think I see within our policy adequate justification for doing the common sense thing that staff's been proposed to us.
A little further discussion, Mr. Desajian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Council, question about the motion. The motion was to support staff's recommendation or management recommendation. I assume that's all of the items, or wasn't specific as one, two, or three. Or, and then my other question is, do we have the discretion, if DSA chose not to be on the ballot, to say they'll also be on the ballot out of fairness? Do we need their input on this before we move forward? Then I have a comment to make after your question.
Let's see, I'm trying to remember your first question was...
Which
recommendations of the staff?
Yeah.
Maybe Ms. Douglas Schatz could put her recommendations up on the computer so we could all see that.
As well as the suggested ballot as well at some point. I'd like to see that.
I think that was part of it, which had the three choices for the two different units.
I believe for recommendations, there were four of them.
I made it great practicing my English. I'm not trying to be an attorney. So.
She's doing that. I wonder if I might ask a question or two. In regard to Mr. Andito's comments relating to the ballot that was established and that would allow for others to join in on that, can you respond to that somewhat? He mentioned that Slocia could join in on this. I'm not quite sure if I understood what...
If they choose to.
Rita Neal from County Council, as I understood his comments, I think he was suggesting that any other bargaining unit potentially could be on the ballot, but from our perspective, what we accepted was a petition by the peace officers, sworn peace officers at the Sheriff's Department, and as I indicated under Penal Code 830.1, they are specifically defined as deputy sheriffs with specific authority. So I would take the position that any other status of peace officer under another penal code would not be allowed on this ballot.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Meacham, I think the point of putting a DSA on the ballot is that they are the incumbent organization, and no other organization would come in on that same reasoning.
Okay.
Didn't you have a slide with your recommendation following that? It's my understanding that the motion then was directed to those recommendations that were made by Ms. Douglas Schatz in her PowerPoint presentation.
And based on the findings suggested by Supervisor Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Sajjan? Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Where here do I read that?
Give me a second here.
Rita Neal from County Council. Perhaps on the second recommendation, just for clarification, you might want to indicate that the ASLO filed an acceptable modification petition. Again, recognizing those terms are
right.
Used throughout the policy.
This modification has been an issue, and where does here, if the motion maker was to stick to this recommendation, and your suggestion, Ms. O'Neill, that DSA also appear on the ballot, I don't see it here.
Number five.
Yeah, number five, utilize the ballot presented on the prior slide, which included both DSA and ASLO.
Can you go back to that?
Can you back up to that one, please? Thank you.
So number five makes a reference, and this has to be specifically included in our motion language.
Correct.
This is the my intent of the motion was to have all three options available on the ballot, as shown.
I wanted to hear that, but to my follow-up question, and I would like to make a comment. DSA chooses not to appear on the ballot. What right do we have or discretion do we have to put them on the ballot? And in order to do so, do we need their blessings, so to say?
Well, I think that this board can make your finding today based on the motion, and the ballot would proceed forward. I suppose that the DSA could petition not to be on the ballot. I'm not really sure how they would do that, but if the board would make a finding that that's what the ballot's going to look like, the management representative would be directed to proceed with the election with that ballot.
I just didn't want to create more harm here and move forward with some kind of understanding. And maybe they choose to comment on this at this time, Mr. Chair. That's up to you, but I would like to make a comment after that.
I'll let you go ahead. You want to comment on that?
Any members from DSA,
pardon me?
If I may ask you this question, ma'am, if the choice of the board is to move forward, but be sure that DSA is also on the ballot, what would be your take at this time?
Well, at this point in time, I don't think you have the authority to do any of the above. And so any action that you do take would be unlawful because of the modified petition
status. The answer is no.
Okay. The answer is I won't give you an opinion because you can't do what you're proposing.
Thank you. Okay, thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, yes. If I may, it always has kind of boggled me this because I always look at, if you look at it as the Association of Deputy Sheriffs or the Deputy Sheriffs Association, I always look at you as one body, and I always, my opinion is such that as unified body, since you all wear the same color uniform and same badges, always been a powerful body to be represented by one voice, and my concern always being, how would this divorce separate you? Would you still be that strength that you always had, bringing your vision forward through any time that we have negotiated with wages and anything else? And I hate to see you go that route, but I will respect your rights to choose to do so. But always inside, I always love to see you as one unit and always look at you. And regardless what happens, I will still look at you that way because you are the Sheriff's Department. And thank you for all the great job you have done for us.
Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well said, Mr. Ashajian. I'd like to propose two relatively small modifications to the motion. First, the one that was suggested by County Council on the second staff recommendation to change recognition and decertification to simply a valid modification petition. And the second one is to approve their recommendation of the ballot subject to the consent of the organizations proposed to be on it, so that our motion would specifically set up the ballot with either or both of those organizations on it, but that our motion would ask for their written determination as to whether they wanted to be on the ballot or not.
I have a question on that. My concern, Mr. Sheriff,
go ahead.
If you could. Mr. Gibson, with that is that if DSA, as currently expressed by their attorney, is not recognizing our action as lawful, then it's unlikely we're going, if it's contingent on getting them to say, yes, we want to be on the ballot, and they don't want to.
Yeah, not the intent, actually,
okay.
that we would put forward a ballot, but we wouldn't force either one of those organizations to be on it.
Right.
The wide speculation is that there's litigation ahead. I won't comment one way or another on
right.
that. Doesn't really affect our choices here. I think we've made a well-reasoned motion here. But the intent of my modification was to say that either or both of those organizations should indicate to the management representative whether they want to be on this ballot or not.
I would prefer that we have the three options on the ballot as shown, and if, say, one of the organizations don't want to appear on the ballot, then they petition not to be on it, because I think it's only fair to the organization as a whole that they have, when an election takes place, that all the members have the opportunity to vote.
Let me ask this though, in that regard, if that's the direction the board wishes to go, is there a time requirement when someone has to come back with their either approval or disapproval to be on this ballot? I mean, so this has gone on for a year, and
yeah.
So are we looking at this process taking even longer? And as Ms. O'Neill mentioned, that this sets the stage for, I think this sets the stage for some legal challenge somewhere. Somebody's not going to be happy with this. But my concern is, if the board makes a determination to move forward and put something on the ballot, and seeking the request of the others to do so, could this delay this for an indeterminate amount of time?
If you're going to do that, my recommendation would be to place all three of those options on, subject to a right within a limited period of time, say 10 days or 2 weeks. Anyone who's on there could withdraw, but it doesn't require an affirmative action to be placed on there.
Okay, that work for you?
Just to clarify that, Supervisor Gibson,
yeah.
I, as the motion maker, accept the recommendation that we change the language in the second item to be a modification, and also that the ballot appear with the three options that are shown, or that have been shown, and that if either organization does not want to appear on the ballot, then they petition
within
10 days to not appear on that ballot.
Working days. And I accept those modifications. Is there, as a second, is there a thought that this ballot shall be submitted within a certain amount of time? Does management representative have a time frame to get this ballot then before the affected employees?
We didn't specify a certain amount of time, but we'll want to do it
within 30 days?
Yes.
We could have everything, I'd put a 30-day time frame on that if we can do that, because based upon what I just heard from the attorney, there's going to be arguments on that. But the other, I wanted to ask Madam Clerk, did you get all of this?
I hope so.
Okay, including the findings as suggested by Supervisor Gibson?
Yes.
Okay, then I have a motion by Supervisor Patterson and a second by Supervisor Gibson to approve staff's recommendation with the modifications suggested.
And let me just ask, if I could, the motion maker on a ballot before the affected employees within 30 days, part
yes.
of the motion?
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay.
We have a clerk that may want to.
Yes, ma'am.
Julie Rodewald, County Clerk Recorder. I talked to Tammy yesterday about us conducting this election, and I said, well, no, I don't really particularly want to do this. And she said, well, actually, in the employee relation policy, it says if they can't agree on who's going to do it, you will do it. I'm not sure. I mean, it's not real clear on what the procedures are. We've never done one of these kinds of elections. It talks about polling places. I don't know if we need to get agreement. I haven't really talked to council about any of this. So maybe if you could give us a little more time than 30 days. I mean, we'll try and do it as quickly as possible, but I really need to talk with council about what this election actually is. It's clearly not just an all-mail ballot election. I can take the ballot and mail it out to the list of people that I get from Human Resources, I'm assuming. It talks about polling places and set times when people can go vote, and people being notified at least 15 days before that election date. So I would just ask for a little bit more time.
Yes.
Would 45 days rather than the 30 be adequate?
I would hope so, yes.
And if you would need more time, I think if you just would talk to the board or talk to legal counsel on that, we can...
It may be something that will return to your board with, this is the procedures, these are the polling places, this is the date, this is, I mean, it all came up fairly quickly in terms of who's conducting this election, so...
Okay.
Thanks.
So we'll modify that to state that the election will be within 45 days.
Okay. Yep. Have a motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Asajian?
Aye.
And Mr. Meacham?
Yes. That concludes business for the day. We do have closed session, Mr. Jensen.
I expect about 1 hour.
1 hour, and then we'll be back to report out. Thank you very much.